I mean, yeah, definitely. Thanks, you guys, for joining. Must be the music. You know, part of what we've been doing over the last couple of months and stuff is talking to artists from the music industry, just getting a sense of their journey. You know, it's not everyone who has a chance to get a record deal, have hit
Right.
records, and be in music. And so, we always like to start off in the beginning, like how you guys started. Then, you know, some of the successes and challenges, and then we kind of get to where you guys are now and what we
Right.
can look out for going forward.
Okay.
So, I mean, as I know, you know, most people, you know, have heard some of the biggest tracks you've had in the past, but it's always good to get a sense of where the original group came from and how you guys started.
Well, I'm the original, one of the original members, Lloyd Speck Turner, so I go by Speck. And we started, we were a cover band basically in Columbus, Georgia. Me and Kelvin, who's not here yet, the other original member, we went to elementary school together and went to middle school and we went to high school. But in high school, we were in the band. We all played drums. And all of our friends played drums. Kelvin was actually was one of the best drummers, so he was a section leader. So I was like, it's too many drummers, let me do something else. So I picked up the trumpet, played that a little bit, then I transferred over to piano. So started playing the piano a little bit and all that. And we just decided, you know, we loved music so much in high school, and it was a few other bands around, older guys than us in our town of Columbus, Georgia. We decided to put a group together, and we actually, you know, formed a few musicians. Me as a keyboard player, Kelvin's a drummer. We had another guy played bass. And we had another keyboard player. And actually, at that point, we had a male singer and a female singer because we were a cover band. So we were playing, you know, old that we were playing the old Keith Sweat, you know, Make It Last Forever, you know, with the, I forget the lady name that sings with it. So we needed a female to do some of the duets. So actually, that's where we first really got started. After that, me and Kelvin really started working on more original music. And we decided, you know, we really want to pursue this. And we really just didn't really dismiss the female singer. You know, she wanted to do some solo stuff, but we were happy with that. So we got another male in the group, another male musician actually, and we were still doing cover songs. At one point, Gene, Teddy, Guy, today the group, they came to Columbus, Georgia, opened up a show. I mean, they did a show there. We saw that today didn't have an open up a band. They just didn't plan to. Back then, it was a DAT player. They were playing with a CD basically. So we got backstage, talked to Gene, and was like, hey, you know, we see, you know, they don't have a band. You know, we would love to be y'all band. And Gene was like, well, you know, keep in touch. Here's my number. And, you know, we'll see how bad y'all want it. Long story short, you know, we got the gig being their backup band. So we moved to, yeah.
So,
And then,
by this time, how many of you were in the band?
at that point, it was myself, Kelvin, and another guy that played bass. That was in the band with us. And we had another keyboard player. Actually, she was a female keyboard player. And the funny thing is that we had to go to New York, and I didn't have a car at the time. Kelvin's car wouldn't make it. So the only person car that would make it was the young female that was in the car, that had the car. So we were like, we really didn't, we like, man, so we got to ask her to go up there with us because we needed to ride. So she drove up there. And once we got up there, we got up there on a Friday. The offices were closed. That Saturday, that Friday night, we met up with the drummer for Guy. We got his number when they were in town. He let us stay at his place until Monday because that's when the offices opened up and Gene was there. So we went to the office. Gene was like, "What y'all doing up here?" We was like, "If you see us again, hey, we really want to be this, you know, be this band for your company." And he was like, "Since y'all made it up here, you got the job." So it was myself, Kelvin, this other bass player, and this young female. The female wasn't supposed to be there at all, but she was the ride.
Because
So
she
she
played.
got, yeah, she played. Yeah. But technically, you know, it was just supposed to be me, you know, Kelvin, another guy. And so she was a part of the situation as well. And so that's how that happened. We were the backup band. They had one other MD keyboard player that they had from North Carolina that was already they had their eyes on. So we formulated the band for today, did that for a while. Long story short, we told Gene about Basic Black, played a few demos, and we had a lot of instrumentals because we weren't lead singers. He put another guy in the group with us, and at the time he had a solo deal. He was supposed to be in Guy, but he had a solo deal, They didn't put him out. His name was Daryl Dezo Adams.
Okay.
Yeah, and he just passed last year. So, but we met Dezo in New York. So Gene, when Gene and Teddy split ways, they had disagreements. They split ways. We went with Gene, and everybody else went with Teddy. Gene was like, you know what? We want to work with you guys. We want to do this and that. But y'all need a lead singer. They put Dezo in the group.
Oh, so okay. Me, no, okay.
Yeah. Kelvin, Walter, and Dezo. That's okay. That. Yeah, the other two original members.
Yeah, okay. So you've given us so much good stuff, but you kind of brushed over it as if it's not important, because that's, I think, the whole thing is about the actual journey. A lot of people are really interested in that. So right. You're going back to the, you guys go and you're doing the backup stuff for today. So this is Big Bob, West, and the rest of them.
Yeah. We were their first band. Like, they never had a band, so we were their first band.
So what was that relationship like then with Today when you met? I mean, because if they were using backing tracks and then you're saying we're going to be the band, were they like, no, we don't want this, we know what we're doing, or were they welcoming? No.
Yeah, they at first, when we were up there, they never heard us. So Gene was like, hey, I got this band. So we were up there a couple of weeks, we practiced. So Teddy walked in, Big Bub, and I think Wes walked in, and we were practicing the songs, Him or Me, Girl, I Got My Own You. And when Bub heard it, he was like, I can't do that New York accent. My guys, and my ladies, because, you know, she was there with us. And, man, they open arms, man. Big Bub and all of them, they open arms, man. They loved us, man. We had a great time with them. We learned a whole lot from them as well, you know, being from the South and they up North. And at that time, you know, New Jack Swing, bro, that's when Teddy was, like, way on top. Everything he put out was hitting. You know, so we was in that whole realm, man. And we moved up there. We stayed in a hotel for about a year and a half. Our transportation was a limousine to practice and wherever we need to go.
Wow.
That's how they were doing it during that time, bro. I mean, we live in a highlight, but we were the bag of it.
Well, how was it like? I mean, because I know Teddy was big by that time with guys already come out and he was doing Keep Sweating stuff.
Right.
What was it like seeing him, especially as musicians, seeing, because, you know, I've spoken to Timmy Gadlin and a lot of people who've spoken right. about how creative he is. But when you saw him, I mean, did you realize, well, this guy can just come up with tracks, or what was it like?
I learned a lot from him. I mean, he was ahead of his time because he was working with computers back then. Like, you know how we got Logic and all this Personas and all this stuff now, the DAWs? Yeah. He was working on that stuff back then, which I wasn't really interested in it, but he worked with the MPC. So we would sit in the studio, we would actually sit back, and he would invite us, you know, if y'all want to come and chill, man, you know, just come in, and we would see him work. He would just sit up there and formulating the songs, coming up with the chords, and it was just amazing just to see him to create, and him creating that genre of New Jack Swing. You know, my hats always go off to him. I mean, I know him. We see each other. Hey, what's up? You know, what's up, Spec? Blah, 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 this and that. But it's always, you know, I'm always, and I tell him, I said, bro, no matter how much we talk, I'm always a fan. Because you created a style of music. Not just a producer. He created a style of music. And that's one thing, like myself and the guys, you know, that's one thing that every producer will want to do is create their own music that people love you know, take home to, so.
You know, so at this time then, were you guys just focused on being the band? Okay, we're just going to back up band, or did the idea of we could be a group as well start to emerge, and where did the name start coming from, Basic Black?
Well, Basic Black, the name came when we were in Columbus, Georgia. Everything formulated from Columbus.
Okay.
We created the name in Columbus and all that. We actually worked on a few songs in Columbus even before we were the backup band. But when we started doing the backup thing, it was more of, man, we're from a small town and now we're in New York, we're traveling. So we had to soak all that in first.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, the first week when I was in New York, you know, I'm being from Columbus, small town, I'm walking up there with my jewelry on. I'm like, yo, we're in New York. I'm walking around. The first week, I get robbed.
Wow.
Yeah, the first week I'm walking, it's dudes coming at me, knowing that, and even Bud would say, bro, you can't walk around with jewelry. You can't walk around looking at the big skyscraper. They know you from out of town, you know, but I didn't get hurt. You know, they were just, they robbed, basically, you know, but I mean, we always worked on Basic Black, or not just Basic Black, just original music.
Okay.
And that original music turned into, hey, y'all got any song? Oh yeah, we got tracks. We got this. Okay, cool. Let me hear. And that's where it came from.
Yeah. And so in those days, was the female performed musician? Did she leave then, or what was the, how long did she stay?
She stayed through the whole run. And actually, when Gene and Teddy split, we actually moved on and went as Basic Black, brand new. That's when she like, you know what? I can't do it anymore. I'm not in the Basic Black group. Y'all not doing the Today thing. Have gone with Gene, have gone with Teddy. So she just stopped and she moved on and she went back to college. And she's a doctor now.
Okay.
And, but see, the funny thing is we all still keep in touch. I keep in touch with her. We spoke to Big Bubba a couple of weeks ago. You know what I'm saying? Some of the guys live here in Atlanta. So it was a, you know, it wasn't a bad situation because we made friends.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And so by the time the split happened, because you know, Teddy has spoken about that and Aaron and Damon have all spoken about that, it how did that feel for you guys being right there in the middle? Did the loyalty, the sort of, because being there when it was things, you know, GR Production was, you know, was supposed to be the next big thing. Right. And, you know, it could have been bigger than Bad Boy and Arrest. But when the split happened, how was it like right in the middle for you guys?
By us being the bagger band and we're pretty much the last one to actually come within the company, we didn't hear a whole lot. We just knew that a split was coming. And we would talk to Gene a lot because Gene was he formulated all the practices and all this stuff. And he was the one that actually got us up there and put us up and do all this stuff. We knew Teddy. We met with Teddy. We talked to him when we saw him. But Gene was more of the go-to guy and Donna at the time. Mm-hmm. So we really didn't know. Gene would tell us one story and then we would hear other stories from the other side that, hey, Gene did this. Oh, no, Teddy did this. So Gene was coming back to Georgia. We from Georgia. Let's go back home. So we had a place to stay. You know, our moms, our families from there. So we were like, hey, we had no choice but to come back to Georgia. You know, and luckily and blessed that Gene was like, you know, I still want to work with y'all and let's do this Basic Black thing.
Okay.
And that's where really we got, you know, we were on an independent label, which was Sony Sounds of New York, which was Gene's label. And that was, She's Mine was first put out on that as an independent record.
And so also then you split off from Today as well, because they went their side or, okay.
Yeah, yep.
So at this point then, when did the lead singer, is it Denzel?
Diesel. Yep.
So how was it when he got introduced? What was that like when they said, look, you need a singer, here he is? Did you guys say, whoa, we've got
our... I mean, we knew we needed a lead singer, and we heard him, we was like, bro, you can sing. It was all about music with us, you know, about getting a project out. Our dreams were to, you know, be in a group and be signed, and that was coming true. So whoever the players were in the group or in the situation, we, you know, us being from the South, we hospitality, we open-armed up.
Okay.
You know, and luckily he was the same way. Even though he's, you know, from New York, he was the same way, you know. So it was a good mesh. We actually, the group stayed together. We lived in, you know, we had apartments together, working on the record, the album. So we were together for a few years.
Okay.
You know, so it was a good transition.
The big thing that we hear about with music, it's the dirty business of contracts, publishing, writing, and all that stuff. Right. You know, a lot of artists have struggled with that, you know, want getting into the business and enjoying the limelight and not realizing, actually, this is a business. How am I going to get paid?
True.
Did you guys were you guys knowing what was happening? Like, if you're signing a contract, what you're signing and publishing and writing your own stuff, or what was it like for you guys?
Well, we knew about the publishing in that situation. So we had some of that taken care of, but we still had a small, within the group, we had a small situation where, you know, one of the members in the group, where they were more friends with Gene than other. Some of us kept it real business. Some other were, you know, more friendly with Gene. And at one point, some of the publishers that we thought we had was signed over to another member in the group, which we was like, okay, how did that happen? And blah, blah, blah. But we went through that situation. Another situation was, when you're touring and you're on the road, this is what was told to us. Well, you know, you guys, you know, you're going to make your money from touring and all that stuff. But when you're out on the road and checks come in, how are you going to get your money? Mm. So you need to, you know, all your checks, when they come through, just sign this paper and it'll be CO to, you know, Griffin Entertainment. CO means care of. So that means when the check come in, he can sign it. So if a check came in for $10,000, oh, yeah, you had a check in for $2,000. Y'all split this up between the four of y'all. Mm. So, you know, some of that went on.
Wow.
You know, but at the time, we really that part of the business we really didn't know. We just assumed that, okay, we're on tour. I guess our checks will go in and get stacked up because we never went on tour as a group. We went on as a backup band where every time we did a show, that following week, we got our check. Because as a backup band, we're just hired musicians. You know, so we, you know, got our checks. But as an artist, it's totally different. You know, your incorporation, your, you know, incorporated and all that stuff, LLC. And so the checks went back here and then telling us, hey, for y'all to get paid, you'd have to do this. Okay, we just worry about our show. You know, who we performing with. Let's make sure we better than them. We ain't worry about other junk. Let's just, they, that's what they do. We, they're paid to handle that, which back then we should have known, hey, we need to take care of our business.
And so the four of you really kind of didn't know about this and you were just trusting everyone around you and stuff like that?
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, you know, it's a sad story that every artist goes through, which I see how every artist goes through it now. You know,
do you think it's better now? Just a side note, do you think more artists are a lot more attuned, or do you think they're still falling traps of what you guys fell in the early days?
Well, that's a two-part answer. It's better because it's more independent artists. They have their own thing. They can go out, do their own shows, make their own money, put their own t-shirts out. Like the t-shirts and stuff that we wear, we have a printing company that we own. So we print all our t-shirts, all our merchandise.
Okay.
So we can handle everything on our own. But to really get to that next level, you do need a lot of connections. You need that money behind you. You need that machine, which is a label. The label is going to say, hey, this is what we can do. This is what we need from y'all. So it really is up to the artist to say, okay, I'm going to take a hit, but I want to get to that next level.
Okay.
You know, but, you know, so it still happens to this day.
So going back... Yeah, so going back to when you guys released She's Mine, how was it like when the record came out? Did you start seeing, was it, it was a big track coming in? People might have thought, hey, this sounds like Guy. What was it, who did the production on that? Because it did sound very similar to Teddy's stuff.
We did a production, just like now. We all do our own writing and production. We did, as the group, we did our own production. And of course, yes, it sounded somewhat like New Jack because that coming from Columbus, we were playing cover tunes to move straight to New York and be with Teddy and all of them. That's all we heard. So we absorbed New York, that New Jack swing, just the vibe. And when we started working on newer music, that's where it came out. It came out like that. You know, and then we were with Gene. So Gene's known for New Jack. So he wanted a New Jack sounding record, so that's what we did. And it was released on his independent label. Okay. And it picked up so well that it was on, matter of fact, if you see it, it'll say Sounds of New York, Basic Black, She's Mine. And actually, it's the original version, not the version with Pete Rock and CL Smooth. Yeah. We have an original version of it that's on a white label. Once Motown heard it, they wanted to sign a group, which actually was a great thing, but it hurt us because once we signed a deal with Motown, they went and took every record at the time, record stores and you know all that stuff. They took all our merchandise off the shelves because it didn't have the Motown label. So we had to take everything on because they had that the Griffin label on it, the white label. And then everything was re-released through Motown. But you realize you lose the momentum.
We lost
a lot of momentum, you know, from that switch.
Yeah. And so So Gene, he gets a lot of writing credits and production credits. But was he in the studio with you guys doing the drums, anything like that when you guys were?
Nah, he would come through, like he would come to the studio every night. Not come through meaning like he's sitting there. If we had a studio at 8 o'clock, 8 o'clock at night, we did about 4 o'clock in the morning. 10 o'clock Gene come through, 10:15 Gene gone.
Yeah, okay. Okay.
Because he was about his money. He wanted to see, hey, they're supposed to be in the studio. Let me just pop up.
But he wasn't in the mixing. He wasn't on the sounds. He wasn't right.
None of that.
Okay.
None of that. But he did pin some of Special Kind of Fool. I give him that. He wrote some of that right there. He could write. He was a great writer. But he had so much business going on that I understand that it took him away from a lot of the creative process. Because you got to realize with us, he was still, even though him and Guy and all of them split up, they still had contracts. So he still had to, you know, deal through those contracts and attorneys. And he was looking for more stuff and investments that he had. It's a lot of stuff.
So the it actually solves a critic, because when I watch look at the videos, I always wonder how come, unlike other groups, that you guys weren't all singing. And so now you explain that you guys were the musicians, and then and you had one probably singer who. So it kind of makes. I was watching, keep watching, thinking, well, I wonder why they went.
In the group, Kevin, like, he's a drummer. Myself, I sing a, not lead, but I sing a little background. But my main thing was learning from Teddy. You know, Teddy, he does the voice box, the actual talk box now. But back then, I did the vocoder. So on the song, like, Whatever It Takes, I'll do, that's me on the vocoder. Okay. So I would sing all the backgrounds with the vocoder. Even now, live, even though they sing live, I still do the backgrounds with the vocoder.
Okay.
That was my role in the whole situation. So, but now we have two great singers. You know, Anne Dupree and Big Sean, man. So we're a powerhouse, baby.
Yeah, yeah. No, we're gonna come to the new star. I think the historical, the Nothing But a Party. How did that come about? Because that's a song that if I play now, it still sounds very fresh, and it's probably the biggest one, biggest track. But as I said, it's probably one track that everyone would think Teddy did, because that's how powerful it was. How did that come about?
The funny thing, it doesn't to me and Kelvin, because me and Kelvin did the production on it. It doesn't sound like Teddy at all. It doesn't to me. It doesn't sound anything that he would do. You know, it which is so funny. But we did that track when we were the Bagga Band, just working on the music. We were in New York. We had a, you know, stand up there and everything. And we just worked on music. I can't really give you exactly how that came about, but we just, you know, worked on music. You know, it's not, we were going to do a song called Nothing But a Party and da da da. I can tell you this one thing with the lyrics, because Diesel wrote most of the lyrics with Kelvin. And it was a party that says, the only party I know is at City Lights.
Yeah.
City Lights was, when we signed our deal with Gene, we actually signed the contract at a club in Columbus called City Lights.
Okay.
So we put, and you got to realize, we did that. And to this day, Sprague Doogie Williams,
yeah,
he was actually our tech. Before he did anything with music, when we were basically like, we brought him on the road with us. We brought him up to New York. Another guy named Chris Smith, who worked with our Gerald Levert. So a lot of people we had on the road with us were from Columbus. So we always went back, brought people up, and talked about Columbus in our music.
Okay. Okay. So I know Sprague from other productions he has, and also Walter as well.
Yeah.
Because I think some of them have done a lot of stuff with Blackstreet and Teddy and stuff like that.
Yes, they have.
So they've moved around and stuff like that.
Gallagher Brothers, man.
Yeah. So which of the tracks, I mean, because for me, I think, and I moved from the UK, I was even living in Africa for a while when Nothing But a Party came out. Which of those tracks did you think was your, really blew up from your point of view? Then it's like, well, this was our biggest sort of track.
Well, the biggest song that was never released was Special Kind of Fool, the ballad.
Wow.
That song gets played, like, right now, you can turn on 12 o'clock at night, they playing Special Kind of Fool. And that wasn't even a single. We didn't even think that song, at first, we didn't produce the song. A guy named Zan the Man.
Oh, Zan, okay.
Zan produced that song. We added a little extra keys to it, but he produced that song. We didn't like the song at first. Not gonna lie to you. It was like, it's slow. One of his favorite. And we'll get to that. That's how we made a song, but we'll get to that.
Okay.
But we didn't like the song at first, but that, to me, just talking to people and throughout doing our shows and people on the internet, people ask about, is y'all gonna see Special Kind of Fool? Yeah, you know, they come to that song.
Wow.
And my favorite song is She's Mine, the original version. Yeah.
The original version, okay. Yeah. And so, but Nothing But a Party, though. I mean, because as I said, that in itself.
You like that one.
But I just did wonder, though, did you then, you know, even the video, you know, was big and everything. Did you guys...
Right.
Did Motown push that one more than the other tracks?
With Motown, we really didn't get a great push. They did videos, they put us out, but we didn't have a big campaign behind it. You know, that was the one thing we didn't like. They put us out. We, you know, went on tours, which was a great thing, but we held our own. People, when they heard us, they're like, man, who was that? You know, because we learn from the best. You know, when Teddy and I performed, you know, back in the day, Teddy had his band. Oh my gosh, they were crazy. I don't know if you remember, like, Abe and Bernard Bell, Regina
Bell.
Yeah,
Bernard Bell, yeah.
You know, they were they were the band behind God back then. And they were knocking. So we learned from them. You know, so when we got a lot of our shows, it was because they heard Basic Black, man, who we need them with us. You know, and that's how we got a lot of our shows. So Motown really didn't push us that much, man. So, you know, really a lot of stuff came from the fans and everything.
Did you think that if you had stayed with Gene's Independent, you would have done much better?
No. You know, I mean, Motown, they got the push. You know, we were on Video Soul before all the video stuff happened. We were on, you know, BET. We did Soul by the Sea, which was in Jamaica with the Motown Review and all that stuff. Yeah. So, no, Motown did put us in big places, big arenas. We didn't give it that. Gene got us that start, though. He, you know, how he kicked down the door. He didn't knock on the door, didn't crack it open. He kicked down the door. Motown was like, oh, we got to work with this. We got
it. Okay.
Yeah.
So then what happened by the second album? I mean, after the first album, what happened?
Doing a tour thing, that's when we, with the money situation, was kind of crazy. So we're doing shows and we're coming back and, you know, we live in an apartment, separate apartments, you know, myself and Kelvin, we live in one apartment and Mucho and Dizzo, they're in a different one, same building, pretty much across from each other. Mm. Power out in our apartment. So we run a station cord to their apartment. So we like, yeah, it was that bad. It was like, you know, what's going on? And it just wasn't a good situation. And as a group, we decided, hey, we're going to break off and go independent, just go on our own. You know, even not with Gene, we're just going to leave the whole situation. Which, you know, Gene didn't like that. And it was a problem from there. Yeah.
But even Motown, do they not think, oh, we've got a nice group here that's very similar to Guy, you know, let's try and do what we can to keep you guys together?
Well, no, because you got to realize it's, and what we realize, it's a business. And even though Daryl, amazing singer, the production was amazing, we had great songs, we had top tens in Billboard, you know, but legally, they didn't want to say, hey, we're going to take Basic Black and do this and that, and then Gene come back, and well, you know, I still got them on the contract, I'm about to sue Motown for $30 million. So they were like, well, we can't do anything. We can't do nothing. We went to them, can't do nothing. You know, and that happened in a situation as producers, that's a whole different story. But dealing with Missy Elliott, Dallas, and some other people, you know, it was a situation that happened. They were like, hey, until y'all get out of this situation, we can't do nothing. Wow. You know, but it's business though, we understand.
I mean, and I guess, from Under Harrell to Teddy, everyone, just Gene was, you know, he taught Suge Knight how to do stuff. I remember seeing Fat Man Scoop interviewing Teddy Riley, saying that he was part of the little camp back in the days and he escaped with just one rib broken. So, you know, the picture is plain that Gene was not the easiest guy to deal with.
Well, I'm going to give you a story. I'm going to give you a quick one real quick.
Go ahead.
I'm going to give you a little dirt. You know what I'm saying? We're not really dirt, but when we were deciding to move away from that situation, the lead singer, have mentioned to this female, you know, we about to leave Gene, we about to do this, we about to do that, and Gene come through here, you know, I got some form if he show up. You know, just talking to this chick. Chick in the strip club, next thing you know, I guess I've assumed Gene was at the strip club. I don't know what happened, but somehow the girl got the word back to Gene. So next thing you know, Gene's like, hey guys, I want to have a meet with y'all. We're like, okay, cool. Gene, boom, knock on the door, it's Gene and this other dude. And next thing I know, Gene walk in, is me, Dizzo, Kelvin. At the time, Idris Muhammad, I don't know if you remember him. He was in a group called ARB at the time. And he rapped on Nothing But A Party.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, at the end, yeah. So Gene walk in, and he look at Daryl like, so I heard you had you know, you're going to handle my bit. You know, you're going to handle me if you see me. Gene had a gun in his hand.
Oh, goodness.
Bam, pistol whoop. You know, everybody get on the floor. So... Wow. You know, that's where that went. And then, you know, it didn't go any from there. He said what he said and he left. We were like, bro, we got to, that's it. We done. And he knew we were done then. But yeah, Gene, you know, he that dude.
Yeah,
he was that dude.
Yeah, we're going to see him in the Uptown Forever film. They're going to, you know, I think Kenny Burns is going to play him in Uptown Forever. So we're going to see parts of that.
And, you know, Donna is coming out with her own, documentary with Gene. Yeah. I think it's called King. Yeah, it's called Jack to This.
Okay.
Yeah, Jack. Yeah. So she's coming out with a documentary as well about Gene and about a new Jack and all that stuff that we actually are part of that documentary.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, it'll be good to hear that. So, Ben, it's quite strange though, because if you guys are, hit records coming out, and then you're within the group, you're like, this is not working, we're breaking up. It's not like you're gonna go back and go back and become doctors or lawyers. What did you think you were gonna do next?
Well, production, we thought we were gonna, as the group, we were gonna try to go back and work with other independent labels and this and that, but that didn't happen. Actually, Diesel moved on and went down to Virginia. Mucho, he went down to Virginia and was working
Oh,
with
to join
Teddy.
Teddy, okay.
And me and Kevin, we didn't want to do that. We decided to let them do that, and we stayed up here. Actually, me and Kevin, we signed to Dallas Austin as producers, staff producers.
Okay.
So we signed him for a couple of years. Then from there, we signed to Jermaine Dupri as staff producers. That's when we worked on Whitney Houston, Too Short, Snoop Dogg, and a few other people. And then Kelvin brought back to the attention, hey, we ought to do Basic Black again. And I was like, I don't know about that, man. People don't really, but we, still hear our music, still hear the songs and all that stuff. And we decided, hey, okay, well, all right, let's do it. And we wanted to find new members.
So when was this then? I guess just before you started auditioning new members, did you? What was it like going behind the scenes and just working in that capacity, and all the drama being away and just focusing on creating for other people? What was that like?
Well, signing to Dallas is great. I mean, with him, gave us a lot of freedom. The lucky thing is that we didn't have to go out and find a job. Like a lot of, you hear a lot of musicians that after they deal mess up, they went and work. So at the
Yeah.
time, we didn't. We signed to Dallas, and we would have to be at the studio like twice a week. So we were always working on music. And with Dallas, it was just a catalog. It wasn't that, hey, let's work on this artist, that artist. Y'all come to the studio, everybody work. At the time, it was myself and Kelvin. A guy named Arnold Henning, who produced Cupid for 112,
Wow.
Tim and Bob, which I'm
Oh,
sure
he
you know
had Tim and Bob under them. Wow.
Tim and Bob, we were all in the same camp.
Wow.
We were all in the same, and actually Tim and Bob left before we left. And when Tim and Bob left, they were like, yo, dude, yeah, I mean, y'all dope, man. But that's all we can say, y'all dope, but we gotta move on. And I'm just saying, we really can't say y'all in the contract and blah, 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 but we gotta move on. So they left the situation, but we stayed. We stayed in the situation. So it was a good situation. We were
Yeah.
happy about it. We just didn't want to, we just concentrated on the music. We just concentrated on creating more sounds and all
Yeah.
that. Yeah. We
Yeah.
the group wasn't in our mind at the time. We were
Yeah.
just working on our music.
And so then, you say you work with Jermaine. So I guess from Teddy Dallas, I mean, they're both young, both Jermaine. Teddy, when you met him, was young. Jermaine and Dallas
Yeah.
were both young kids and stuff. What was, I mean, did you, could you see that these producers had something special despite their young age while you're working with them?
Yeah, well, Dallas is funny thing with him. We're older than Dallas, but we kind of grew up. Dallas grew up under us, and Dallas and Kevin are cousins. But
Okay.
that didn't get assigned to DART at the time. We actually got to DART because of some other production that he didn't know that we did, and he was like, "Well, who the producers?" Okay, me and Spec. Me from Columbus? You talking about Basic Black? And they were like, "Yeah." And word got out, and then he wanted to meet with us, and that's how we got with that situation.
Okay.
After we left the Dallas situation, we had a friend once in Columbus, had this publisher was signed to Air Ground Control Music, which is a part of So So Def. And he was like, yo, man, I sent some of y'all music to this publisher. Hey, he got some songs placed for y'all. I'm like, okay, cool. So we talked to this guy. He was like, man, I let Jermaine hear some of y'all stuff. He want to sign y'all. So at the time, we were in limbo. Boom, let's sign to Jermaine. We really didn't work with Jermaine personally. We met him a few times, but it was just about, his business. We just working on music.
Yeah.
But I
And
know
so,
now
yeah.
I wouldn't sign to another producer. Now, back then, I understand the reasons why, but now if you're a young producer, I wouldn't sign to another producer.
And that's what Rodney
Jerkins.
Jerkins was saying, that Teddy offered him a deal, and his dad says, no, you need to pay for, I think, $4 million a year.
Right.
And he's like, okay, Teddy said, that's out. But he just continued interning for another 3 years and stuff until he got the Mary gig and all that stuff. But
Right.
and even Neptune's also, they didn't take the deal.
Right.
They just learned and stuff like that. So
Go.
your advice for producers is not to sign for another one,
Keep
just to
creating your own music, yeah. But every situation is different. Even with publishing deal, like now, if it's not a big number, I would never sign another publishing deal because you're signing it because you want the money now. You need the money. You don't want to go out and hustle. You don't want to go out and do this. You know, somebody say, oh, we'll give you a deal, $100,000. You eat that up in 6 months. It's gone.
Yeah.
And the next thing you know, you got to turn all these songs and, you know, if your songs on your place, you don't have any more money coming in. And so as you don't have any more money, you're asking for more money. They're giving you more money. Now you're in debt. Then at one point, they're going to say, you know what? You're not bringing in the records. You're not bringing any money in. We got to let you go. But you still have a debt.
Yeah.
You know, so that's a big problem.
Okay. So then you said the idea then to bring back the group. How did the conversation come about?
Well, Kelvin, I mean, I really didn't, at that time, I didn't want to do the group because we was doing other production. And I'm like, yeah, we up in Asia. You know, we don't want to do that. Even though we saw other groups coming back out. But Kelvin's like, yo, let's do Basic Black. I'm telling you, we do it. It's going to work.
When was this? What year was this? Around what year was this?
About three years ago.
Okay.
You know, and Kelvin lives about 5 minutes away from me. So he's driving to my house. Yo, dude, come on, man. Let's just ride with me. Let's talk about it. You know, and I really didn't want to do it. And then next thing you know, a friend of mine from Columbus, a guy named Matrix, he hit me up. He was like, yo, man, this dude, some special kind of fool over. I'm like, huh? Out of the blue, he come telling me this. Mind you, I just talked to Kelvin 2 or 3 weeks talking about putting a group together. And now another friend of mine said, yo, man, you got to hear this dude sing. And when I heard Sean sing, Special Kind of Fool, I'm like, okay, who is this? You know, and I was crazy. And then that confirmed. I said, you know what? Okay, yeah, let's try something. Because this dude, he raw with it. Kelvin at my one ear. And I'm getting signs from other people to do something. And then when I met Sean, man, we just clicked. It's like we knew each other for years. We just clicked. And I'm like, man, we got to do it. So that's how it really came about.
Like with Sean, because if you're the first one that joined in, how did the song come about for you that you kind of remember the song and you were singing it? Or, and did you know the group at all?
Well, when I was a teenager, man, like I said, I came up in the New Jack Swing era, like heavily influenced. 17, I actually remember these guys, man, when, you know, the album first dropped, actually remember hearing I think it was Number the Party on the radio, She's Mine. And I remember running up to my brother's house. He had these long steps. And I used to run up there all the time, excited. I was young. I just ran up there, running like, no, what's going on? What y'all doing? Everybody dancing. What y'all playing? What's this? They was playing She's Mine, actually. And I was like, man, that sounds good. Who that is? He's like, it's Basic Black. Oh, yeah, okay, cool. And I was like, we just had a good time. We listened to the album. The original album, Basic Black album, and I was like, man, let me borrow it. He was like, no, he gotta get your own. So I went to my mama. You know, they had a commercial on back then. I'm like, oh no, my brother, you gotta get your own. And that's what he said to me. He's always quote that. Javier.
Javier.
Yeah, he did not. I was like, so I went to my mom. I said, Mom, you gotta get me this album called Basic Black. So she bought it, and I had it on cassette.
cassette.
And yeah, man. And that's how I just played it over and over again, especially because Kung Fu is my favorite song. So heavily influenced by music, actually hearing Diesel's voice, which encouraged me to do R&B because I was trying to be a rapper at the time. I won't even lie.
Okay.
I was rapping and you couldn't tell me I wasn't going to be the next LL Cool J or, you know, something like that. So after Basic Black came out, I was like, you know, I think we'll try this rapping stuff. So the singing stuff. So I actually was in a group at the time. It was still a rap group, but we kind of incorporated R&B in it.
Okay.
And, you know, I was saying to girls on the phone, and I was saying that Special Kind of Food, and they would love it. So it's like, I think this is what I'm about to do. I'm about to switch it up to R&B. So I start pinning R&B and start getting real good at it and start honing my craft and just always did it, try to get on Jack the Rapper. And man would watch BET and Yo MTV Raps and stay late at night to watch Trackmasters and it's come up. Remember when TV went off, when American flag came on?
Yeah.
I would sit up and watch TV that happened. Wow. And I would go to bed. So, you know, it was like, I was, you know, just heavily influenced. New Jack Swing, Teddy Riley, all the whole era. So you fast forward to me just doing music and just being in the scene. I wind up doing a lot of DJ Scream stuff. I was on Pauly from the Franchise Boys mixtape, Twins mixtape. I wound up being on John Jesus' mixtape. Start working with a guy named African who did put that on everything with who Anthony Hamilton and Young Jeezy. Wow. I did some production, you know, little stuff with them. I started working with our real super producer who worked with Butter, who did Throw Some D's on It and Money Over. I started working with him, and I just kind of just interacting with a lot of, you know, people in the business, and just found my way and decided to do my own project. And then me and Rio did my project. And on my project, I was like, man, we got to put one more song on. I was like, what you thinking? And I was like, let's do a cover. What cover are you thinking? There's a song back in the day called Special Kind of Food.
Special Kind of Food.
A group called Basic Black.
Man, Everybody go to that.
Let's try that. So we kind of, I said, how we going to do it? I was going to listen to the song. We listened to the song and we took the chords, but we didn't put the snare in. Mm-hmm. We just kind of went with the chord, just kind of warm, nice undertone. Used the, he used Reason. So there was a, not auto-tune, it's called Neptune. And we kind of put a little warm undertone under there. Man, it came out pretty nice. I wound up playing around and doing a video to it.
Wow.
And that video actually got like 5,000 views quick. And because I guess the song, everybody always surfed that song.
Right.
So Donna Griffith took it down. She took it down. Oh, the video's not up. She took that down. After Diesel died, she took that video down. Yeah, Donna Griffin took it down. But it's all cool. Hey, it did what it's supposed to do. It never put me in there before that happened. So she can take it down. So shout out to Donna. I love you. Anyway. What happened is I wound up I was at the gas station getting gas and his friend Matrix was like, what's going on, man? I was like, what's going on? He said, man, I got some of these Coolie C beats I want you to hear. I was like, Coolie C, you know, back in the day, who did Kilo and all? He was like, yeah. I said, cool, where you get some Coolie C beats from? You know, because he was just a guy that did music. You know, I didn't take him that serious, but he actually knew a lot of people.
I thought he was going to take
it. And he was like, okay, cool, this is what we're going to do. He was like, I'm working with my boy, Spec. Matter of fact, he need to hit. He need to hit. I said, Spec, come here. He said, Basic Black. I said, you know him for real? He said, yeah, I know him for real. I'm like, stop playing. He was like, I said, okay, cool. I want to meet that guy. He said, yeah, I know him at KB. I'm like, cool. I said, matter of fact, I'm going to call him right now. I said, I cover one of these songs on my album and showed him the video. He was like, oh, no, he got to see this. I'm like, you know him for real. I said, well, give him a call.
Oh.
I said, KB just came in, matter of fact.
Okay.
So I wound up, he wound up sending it to Spec. Spec gave me a call and he offered me to come to the studio here. And I came here and met Michael Song's wife. And that night we did one of the songs on the new album called Shelter.
Yeah.
That same night. And I've been here ever since.
My goodness. So that's this was about 3 years ago, you said?
About 3 years ago, yeah.
Okay. Okay. And then what KB, how did you guys meet KB?
Well, I met KB. KB's original member.
Oh, that's okay.
Yeah, who we've been talking about the whole night.
Yeah. Okay. Anthony was another new member.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah. That's the baby boy. This is the young book right here.
Kelvin and Ant got that story because I didn't know Ant, and Kelvin and Ant, they got their story. I brought Sean to the table. Kelvin brought this dude to the table.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's on them.
KB do the honors.
Yeah.
Okay. Actually, I had met Ant through a mutual friend, and I auditioned like three other singers before Ant for the group. And I saw his videotape and I saw him on a record and everything. And I listened to him sing and I listened to the vocal quality. And Ant had a serious stability that the other singers didn't have. He had that stage presence and everything. So I decided to give him a call and ask him, was he interested in, you know, maybe recording for real? And he was like, yeah, I definitely want to do this. And so basically, you know, I called him. He said, yeah, I'm coming through. He came to audition for us, and I let Spec meet him and everything. I said, this guy won. I said, you know, this guy got it going on, and he did. You know, so we've been working together ever since.
I mean, what is strange, though, because if you had Deezo, who was just the one singer with the rest of you guys, you decided to switch it up this time to have Anthony and Sean vocalists. What was the reason thinking behind that?
Well, basically, you know, we just wanted to try something new, you know, because one of our members that went in a different direction, and me and Speck still wanted to do the basic black group. And we said, well, let's try two singers this time. So, you know, we just put them up in front, you know, put them in the audition state, and everything went down. You know, it just kind of connected. The chemistry was there.
Okay.
And, you know, we just really liked their vocals, and, you know, they brought a lot to the group, a lot of energy.
What was the thing that inspired you to when you reached out to Speck, say, let's reform? What were you seeing? Are you thinking, you know, we need to go back in?
Probably, I'm going to let him know, prior to that, we talked about, I didn't want to do Basic Black at the time.
Yeah.
You know, he had to convince me to do it, so.
Yeah, what happened? What were you seeing around us? Saying, you know, we need to come back?
Well, you know, like, I had some friends in Amsterdam, and I was getting calls from different people in different places. They were like, y'all need to put the Basic Black thing back together, you know, because it was such a great group. Yeah. And I'm like, yeah, you're right. So I started talking to Speck back and forth. He was kind of like, oh, no. You know, like, no, we're going to make this happen. So eventually, you know, I just kept on trying to talk to him. I got him finally influenced and said, okay, let's give it a shot again. And then we just started putting it together, me and him, and then we found Sean and Anthony.
Yeah.
And, you know, everything just kind of came together totally, you know.
Did you at any time think about reaching out to Dizzo and Walter and say, hey, guys, do you want to come back in and stuff before Sean and Anthony?
Well, yes, before the group. Before we got Sean Anthony, we were trying to put things back together, but Diesel was kind of touring. Well, he was doing like some background stuff with Justin Timberlake, and Mucho was into other production.
Yeah.
So we all just said, well, you know, we're all in different areas. So me and Speck were kind of doing our production thing as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, they kind of wanted to focus on what they were doing so that we wanted to focus on what we were doing. So we wanted to put the Basic Black thing back together, you know. Mm-hmm. So we found Sean and Anthony, and we said, we're going to continue to keep on going, you know. So.
But you reached out and they said no, but they gave blessing. They weren't like...
They were just basically busy. They were just it. You know, and they were like, they weren't going to have time. And so, you know, we were trying to do our thing. They were trying to do their thing. So we were like, we're going to move on. And they're like, okay, we got it, you know.
So I think some of the things you find out with groups who are big at one point and sort of split away is that they focus on going back to the back catalog, but you just have that one album. Did you realize, wow, you know, we've got a little problem here compared to others who've had at least two or three albums that we needed to not only be able to perform our old stuff really well, but we need to bring stuff that is equally as appealing because we didn't have the catalog like most of the other bands?
It wasn't really, I mean, for my opinion of it in my process, it was that we already knew with Sean and Ant they can sing. So we wasn't worried about, you know, the old catalog. We knew that we can handle that. Me and Kelvin did all the production on it, so we knew the music was going to be great. When we're performing the old music, you know, the old catalog, we knew the vocals were going to be great because the guys can handle it. And one thing that we always told them, don't try to sound like Dizzo, do what you do. People love the songs regardless. So you're not going to try to sound like anybody else because that's Sean, that's Anthony. We all grown men. We're not going to try to tell them to mimic anybody. That's why the album we have out now called The Resurrection, it's Resurrection because we're resurrecting the Basic Black. We're coming back out. We got two new members, you know, it's a kind of same situation, you know, brand new members in the group. So we got a New Jack Swing song in there called The Anthem, which, you know, pays homage to the New Jack Swing, but it actually brings a little bit more newness to the group because of Sean and Ant. And the newer project that we have coming out is going to be, is even more focused on Ant and Sean vocals, their writing abilities, and just the newer sound. We're not stepping back, we're moving on. And that's one thing that we all agreed upon, that you know, you have to keep reinventing yourself. That's how you keep new. That's how you keep out there. That's how you keep going. A lot of people, oh yeah, we want that old New Jack sound. We can do the old New Jack sound, but nobody will buy it. I hate to say that. We're gonna have at least one New Jack on there, but some people are not gonna get it. Yeah, Bruno Mars do it.
Yeah, I was gonna
people say. Gonna buy it because it's Bruno Mars and okay. Chris Brown can do it. But when you're a brand new, well, not brand new, but when you're a group coming back out, you're from the '90s. Oh, you know, we can come out sound like that old school R&B that everybody wants to hear, but everybody's not streaming it, download, buying it. You know what I'm saying? So it's kind of hard when people say, "I want that old music." we give it to y'all. Just like the new album, we got Always, Shelter, Right Here. We got all these songs on there that are amazing, that's great. And we get a lot of love from it, but it's still not being pushed the way we want it to be pushed. You know? Even though we're giving you that R&B, you know, the people, you know, the radio don't play great R&B anymore.
Yeah.
You know?
So there's always this thing. I mean, once you both have this comfortable life being in a studio, to be going on the road again, I mean, did you guys think it was going to be that easy just to go from city to city and perform? I mean, leave the comfort of Atlanta and then having to go to New York and stuff. Were you guys all prepared for that?
Meaning when we were today and all that?
Well, no, now. Okay. When you reformed, I mean, before COVID, but I'm just thinking when you came back 3 years ago, did you think, oh goodness, you know?
Well, for me, I know everybody got their own opinion, but my opinion was, it was easy because I knew about the role. We bag a band, we knew what to expect. For me, I was more happy because I get to see Sean and Ant, who they've done shows, but not to the caliber where we're going, and just to see them and the people loving them, it just made the situation, because we've been there. And now we're able to bring other people up to see the light. And then, you know, Ant, he acts, he does, you know, he has a few movies and other stuff that he's doing. Sean's writing from other people as well. So everybody's branching out and we're still friends. But it just amazed me to see people shout names and here and there. You know, it's fun to see that, man. Yeah. It's real fun to see that. That's my opinion. They might got something different.
Oh, what about you, KB? Because, I mean, you came up with the idea. Did you think, oh, could just go back on the road again and stuff?
Well, to me, it's easy. It's fundamental. It's what we do. I mean, we're musicians, we're producers, we're songwriters, we're entertainers. And that's just part of the performance that comes with the job. It's like the thing, you know, what we do. And we love doing music. We love performing. We love writing. And we want to produce the songs that people are going to love. So for me, and watching them, it was like super exciting to see them, you know, like two innovative singers that were coming along with their own styles. Spec, I mean, I've been with him musically since, I can't remember, fourth grade.
Yeah.
And we've been doing music forever, so performing for people is just like natural for us. Yeah. I mean, that's just where we come from.
Yeah.
So it was easy for me, totally easy. Right. I guess for Sean and Anthony, I let them.
Yeah.
Well, for me, I say it was a different experience. I mean, I'm used to doing shows where you get on stage and introduce yourself and you come in. I'm not used to coming in with an intro. You know, girls coming in, signing breasts, and I'm like, man, I told KB, I had to sign my autograph. KB, how? What I do? He said, just sign your name on it. I said, okay.
Sign the name. See, that's what we love, man.
Yeah, man. We had a show in Columbus, man. It was cool.
Yeah,
it was cool. I loved every minute of that. Yeah. I didn't even want to go off the stage. I was like, we done. That was all the songs.
Yeah. And we had an hour and a half long show.
Wow. Yeah.
And we like, man, and everybody was like, man, that was done. Y'all finished it early.
They loved it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we actually played homage. We actually did a BBD song. We did a Bobby Brown song, you know, because they can sing anything. So we're able to incorporate in our shows, which back then we couldn't. You know, but nowadays, you know, people incorporate all type of music in their shows.
Yeah.
So that's what we try to do now as well.
I mean, for Anthony, I mean, what was it like, though? Because did you know Basic Black before you joined them? Because they were, you know, I mean.
He the young one out of the group, too.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Did you know Basic Black before you joined them?
So I didn't know originally, you know, Basic Black. I knew of the sound, but it wasn't until I moved to Atlanta. I just got here about 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. So when I first moved here from Wilmington, Delaware, it was kind of, you know, new to me to, you know, hear of Basic Black. Yeah. But I will say, since I met them, since day one, it's just been like, I've known them forever. Like Spec said, you know, with Sean, the chemistry that we all have collectively, as well as, you know, how we just, you know, can build from each other. Like, we literally can create something just by, okay, if Sean says one thing, I'm going to add to that one thing, and then it's going to become a whole situation. But I definitely love the chemistry that we all had. But, you know, as soon as I got here, they embraced me with open arms. It was just like I'm their little brother. And, you know, it goes way beyond the music thing. I mean, if I'm ever in need, they're going to be there. So, I mean, I'm definitely, you know, excited to be here and just, you know, I'm excited for the world to see exactly what we're capable of doing.
Yeah. Now, I think the question I have, because I remember speaking to Joe Little from Rude Boys, and he was, you know, he planned to go solo, and but when the group situation came, he, you know, the Rude Boys situation came, he just jumped on it because it's like this is an avenue. So from your point of view, Anthony, did you, were you always planning to go solo and do your own thing, and then you had an opportunity to join the group, or how was your journey?
That's a good question. So I've never, honestly, so my background is in church. So I'm a church boy. You know, I grew up in church. That's all I pretty much, you know, knew growing up was church music. But it wasn't until I started going to high school and then eventually college where I started to become a little open-minded to the different genres of music. Yeah. From there, I knew that I wanted to be an artist. I really didn't know too much about or even see myself being in a group. But I was open-minded to the thought of it. And especially coming down to Atlanta, I definitely was like, oh, I know that, you know, some situations, a lot of people, they start with groups and then they do their own thing. With me, I didn't have none of those thoughts. I just wanted to be a part of something, you know, where I can do music. So for me, it was a little different. I did, you know, think about, you know, doing my solo projects. But I mean, even now, we still have some things that we, you know, do. But we know that this is the foundation and, you know, this is where I'm at.
Yeah. Yeah, and I guess because it's an interesting situation where, unlike most of the R&B groups in the past, where all four could sing, and then you had somebody who probably was the lead vocalist, but having, you know, two of the members who focus heavily on the production side, and like, look, we're not going to come and stand to take your part and stuff. I guess it gives you guys the creativity as vocalists, both for Anthony and Sean, to express yourselves and make it into your own, I guess.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, I mean, what did you guys, when you guys came together 3 years ago, did you have a plan like, okay, we released The Resurrection, we're going to go on a major tour, and then COVID broke it apart, or what was the idea?
Man. Yeah, we actually had everything set up, and we had a lot of stuff going on. Like, we shout out to Charlie Bynum. He had a lot of stuff set up for us. Like, we was doing a lot. We did iHeartRadio interviews. Mm-hmm. We did, shout out to Jay Smooth. We was radio shows down in Columbus. We released the Always, and that song was really taking off. And we was going to open up for 112 down in Alabama. And then, we did the show in Columbus, and after that, people start really, you know, real taking, the notion that we was back, and a lot of online stuff was beginning to happen, and we start having shows set up to the point that we was getting ready to embark on. We actually was getting ready to do Campbellton Road Day, that was set up by an organization that I knew through a real good mutual friend, and Teddy Riley. Perform and P-Funk performed there like the year before that.
Wow.
And Charlie Bannon, the guy I'm talking about, was actually there with Teddy. And we all was going to meet back up there. And that was going to be, something good. And just a lot of good things were getting ready to happen. COVID happened and messed everything up. You know, we had a new project. Everything was going good. And it's just,
There were a lot of spot dates coming up as well.
Yeah.
Concerts.
Yeah.
Wow.
So we just didn't get to play them. So
So
in the time that you've had, what have you been able to do then? And since you couldn't be on the road, what have you guys been able to do?
We did a virtual show.
Yeah, we did a virtual show. Yeah.
Yeah, we did a virtual show.
That was lit.
Yeah,
that was nice.
Yeah, and interviews like this right here to keep our name relevant, to keep us out, and working on new music. Yeah, that's one thing that we've been doing. Really been working on a newer sound, a brand new sound. You know, just it's going to be different from the last project.
As well as we got some for the holidays too.
Oh yes. Oh yes, we do.
Oh, okay.
Oh my God. You when you hear this, y'all gonna stop singing them. But y'all got a brand new holiday song coming out that's going to be like, we understand you got the original holiday songs out, but this gonna be a brand new one that people are like, oh, this is my favorite now.
Wow. Yeah.
We got a Christmas song.
Song for the family.
It's called Christmas Time.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing. Wow.
I guess we're in October now. When were you guys planning to release it?
Actually,
it's about to soon. we
probably can't, November. I'm about to go back, so I would say November. November. Like the first week of November, hopefully.
Yeah,
that's because it's actually been mixed and mastered, but we're not satisfied with the mix and master, so we got to send it back to get remixed and mastered into, you know, our liking, and and that's when we're going to drop.
Y'all hear this, man? Oh my god! This is a family. I'm telling you, this is a
what I tell you.
This is a song that people gonna play when they have y'all coming over. Okay, y'all got to hear this song. How we back in the day, we used to, you know, set our songs when we want people to come in and play this song so they can just feel it.
Yeah,
that's how it's gonna be, man. It's a feel good song, man.
Feel good, Chris.
Yeah, it's a, oh my god.
So I mean, a lot has changed since the days of say.
Well, we're gonna send it to you.
I look forward to listening so I can promote it, but a lot has changed since the days of, you know, Gene Griffin's independent label on Motown. Releasing music now is somewhat different, so you don't need to go to the record store. What are your plans as a group? Do you think we're going to be doing this stuff independently, get it on the service, streaming services, or do you think, you know what, we might need to get somebody bigger to sort of help us with our, you know, not well, just after this Christmas stuff, but longer term?
It's always good to have marketing promotion behind it. If we can find a label or either a small boutique label that'll give us the push, like market, they can get it out to the masses because we have a good product.
Right.
No one knows about it.
Right.
You just have to get it out to the masses.
Right, right.
You know, now, but we can do that. Right. That's the ultimate goal. Rather independent or signing.
And that's the difference between, you know, music back then to now. Back then, you know, everybody pretty much was signed to a label, and that's all you heard, people that were signed to labels. Yeah. You really didn't hear about independent artists.
Yeah.
But now, independent, you can have 30 new artists come out within 2 hours, you know, every day.
Yeah.
Because everybody's put out music. People that are great, some people that, why are you putting music out? Well, you know, but everybody's putting music out. So now, you know, you do have to have that push behind it to get to that next level. As we spoke about earlier, you got to have that push to get you to that next level. Like I said, we got an amazing project. It's just, we just got to really get it to the masses.
Yeah.
And the crazy thing, once we release this new project, radio's going to gravitate to it even more. They're going to go back. It's like, man, did y'all hear this? The Resurrection they had out? This other out? You know, it's going to go back to that. And we're going to see jumping sales and all that stuff, man.
Yeah.
Hey, Sleepy.
I mean, you've got the brand. I mean, but you've got the one is the recognizable brand name, which goes a long way. And I guess if you had done the shows, it would have also started putting people, you know, SWV have not come out with a new album in a long time, but they've been doing shows. So if they did come out with stuff, people say, oh yeah, we remember SWV and stuff. So I think just having the name is a big basis stuff. But then the product, a good track. Get, you know, if someone hears it once, they remember it and go back to it. You know, what labels tend to push are songs that aren't really that good, that you need to hear 100 times, like, okay, it's not bad.
Right.
But if it's good, you know, the first time you hear it, like, wow, I need to hear it again.
Right.
And that in itself is stuff that, you know, you can do if the product is hot, as you know, you said you guys.
But you got to realize too, it's a lot of playlists out there. You know, I have a lot of playlists. I might hear something. Oh, man, I like this song. I might add it to my playlist. And then I got Tidal, Spotify and all, you know, SoundCloud and all this stuff. And it's so much music that even though, oh, man, this song is crazy, it's hot. The next day, I'm listening to something totally different. I did forget about that song, but that's on a whole different playlist. I might even go back to that playlist.
Yeah.
So even though I think that song is great, as hot as this, there's so much out there that, you know, is not being... They don't have the right promotion, so you won't really hear it out there. You know what I'm saying? It's like if you have that promotion behind you, that marketing team behind you, people are going to hear your music, going to see you. You know, if you hear a hot song on a playlist, 2 weeks later, you're on a whole different playlist. That playlist might have been on SoundCloud, and now you're on Spotify and forgot about the SoundCloud playlist.
Yeah.
You know, but if you see that artist all the time, commercials, ads popping up on YouTube, oh, yeah, I remember that, and then you're going to go back to it.
Yeah. I think the final, as we get to the end, I think one of the questions that people would ask is that when you guys do go on tour and perform, do you guys have other musicians supporting you? Because are we hearing live music or is it backing track? Or what's the makeup of your performance when you guys are live?
Straight live.
Yeah.
Everything is live.
Yeah.
From the band to, you know, the vocals, even the interaction, all that stuff is just live. The voiceovers, we don't, you know, we have some, but for the most part, we are our voiceovers during live, you know, performances. Yeah. So everything is just, so, you know, live.
Everything is live.
We have, so KB's on the drums and Specchio on piano, and then you got somebody else on bass and...
We got another bass player, and we actually got another keyboard player to actually go on the road with us. So when we're doing shows, you know, it's live,
Okay.
You know, we start songs off with the piano, let them talk to the crowd. So if the crowd loving it, we might go 20 minutes with them talking to some girls and blah, blah, blah. You know, so it's not programmed. So, you know, because if it's programmed, you only go for that few minutes, go to the song. But with them, hold up, wait. You know, we'll go back and, you know, do certain stuff. So it's depending on how they feeling at the time.
Well, you know, I don't know if any of you guys caught DJ Cassidy's Pass the Mic Volume 3. They, the first one he had sort of sounds of the 80s. The second one he had more of the hip hop. And the third one, which was more of the 90s R&B, you know, he had from Big Bob represented today and Keith Sweat. And, you know, you had Jade and stuff. So compared to the other two, this one actually really struck a chord. A lot of people like, wow, you know what? We miss our 90s trip, our shows, and seeing some of our few favorite artists. There was only 30 out of over 100, you know, many. And so they've been clamoring. I mean, I'm seeing messages from people saying, this made my day. This was the best 36 minutes of my life. Yeah. And this is where I was saying, if it was possible for you guys to think of, you know, you've got three classic tracks and, you know, you could just sing a hook and a verse of them, and add it together and stuff like that, which it gives people like, I remember that group. I didn't remember In Touch until I saw them perform and stuff like that. So it's amazing how a track, seeing as artists now perform, it triggers memories of wow, and then people are going back to the catalog and looking to see what else they put out there. I'm hopeful that you guys could try and arrange something like that over the next hour, a couple of a day or two or stuff, and sort of when we are pushing this stuff out, we've got stuff to accomplish it, you know, to help with the promotion stuff.
Okay, yeah, we definitely can do that. Yeah. That's not a problem.
Yeah.
That's not a problem at all. Yeah, we definitely do that.
Okay. Yeah. So when I always end my interviews, I always ask the question is that if you guys, and this will be an individual one, so, you know, each will ask, but if you're stuck in an elevator and they said, look, it's going to take about 2 or 3 hours, and we can put a movie on for you, what would you want to watch, Spec?
Oh. Ooh, you know, a movie. Oh man, I love watching all movies, but one of my favorite, which you probably never seen, is a movie called Twister.
Oh yeah, is it that
the tornado?
The tornado one, with Helen Hunt and Bill.
I'm sorry, it's not a music movie, it's about the Twister. Yes. That's it.
Okay.
That's it for me, man.
KB?
I guess musically, I would like this. I guess one of my favorite movies is Prince, Purple Rain. It really is. I like watching Purple Rain and stuff like that.
Yeah. Anthony?
We talking about a music
movie? No, just a movie. If they said, look, we're going to take us to us, a movie.
As a young boy, I'll say mine was The Temptations, the movie The Temptations.
Okay.
Now, you know, you had The Temptations, then you had The Five Heartbeats. I grew up watching The Temptations, so I didn't know too much about The Five Heartbeats, Temptations.
Don't anyone know you, Otis? Come to see you, Otis. Yeah, that's that.
Yeah.
Leon is David Ruffin. That's a classic. Sean, what about you?
Coming to America.
Okay. That's a good one. Then the other question, then I'll go back to Spec, is that they're about to put the movie. They say, look, it will take about a couple of minutes for us to get it loaded up. What song would you want to listen to?
Ooh. There's a new song called Sunshine by this group Basic Black that's coming out. Right now, that's my favorite. Well, my favorite song is called Sunshine. It's a break. That's a, I'm giving y'all a gem. That's a, that, that was, I just dropped some on y'all. Y'all didn't know it. It's a song called Sunshine that, that's going to be on a new project that's coming out. Because okay. That's the one I repeat right now.
Okay. But yeah. Okay. But outside of that, though.
Okay. Outside of that. Yeah. Outside of that. Ooh, it would be Two Occasions.
Oh, The Deal.
Yeah, The Deal. Yeah, okay. The Deal, Two Occasions, yeah. I'm a Babyface fan, and the live version, when he's holding that note for about 30 minutes, the live version of Two Occasions, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
KB?
Wow. That's
kind of
deep.
You had some producers. What were they, you know? Pressure, we listen to a lot of music.
Yeah, but that's the thing, yeah.
Yeah.
I guess Lady in My Life is like one of my favorite songs.
Oh, goodness. That's my ultimate song. The mic is, yeah, that's my also. Yeah, okay. That is. Yeah, I wish he released a single of that. It's his best song ever. Yeah, man. Yeah, so that's my.
Yeah.
Yeah, Anthony?
Mine would definitely be Prince Musicology.
I've never heard of that.
Yeah, in that funk type of, groove. And it's crazy because Prince, I grew up listening to Prince. My dad, he was a Prince fanatic. So, he would play that throughout the house.
Wow.
That was how I learned musicology. That was, one of the first classics that I learned. And that's it stuck with me.
Oh, my goodness. Sean?
A Song for You, Donny Hathaway.
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
That's
classic. Mm. Okay. Yeah, man. It's good to have the variety. And I always ask everyone that I interview the question just really to get a, because there's a lot of songs out there that people don't know, and it's interesting when you have singers and producers and songwriters pick songs that they don't write that inspire them and stuff like that.
Right.
But yeah, definitely, guys. I really appreciate the time. It's going to be really interesting for fans of Basic Black to hear the journey. I think some of the things about Gene would probably, there's lots of fans with the New Jack that didn't really, we didn't really go into the details and stuff, I think there's a lot of people that would really be interested in how that was. I never knew you guys were the backing band to the group today. I didn't realize that. Just until Sean mentioned it, I just assumed, that Gene, my thought was, when Guy left, he's like, I need to get a new group to emulate Guy, so he formed today. That's how we most of us thought.
We were there for about a year and a half, 2 years with Teddy and Gene. So we were right there with them.
Yeah, I mean, but it's going to be interesting for people to look back at Resurrection, listen to that, but also look forward to some of the new stuff from Sunshine and the Holiday. You guys have as well. Do you have videos of some of your tracks that you've made?
Oh, that's coming.
Donna hasn't pulled down.
That's coming.
We actually have a live performance in Columbus. Yeah. That's up on the Real Basic Black
Facebook page
and Instagram.
At
the Real Basic Black.
Yeah.
Okay.
We'll check that out.
But as far as a video for the music that's out now, we don't have one yet, but that's what we're working on.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
You'll have that soon. Definitely.
Okay. Well, I mean, as I said, it's really been great. It is 3:00 over here in London. So, as I said, I definitely looked forward to this. I mean, as I said, it's, you guys, not just the history of what you guys created, it's always good to connect some of the past with the present. So a lot of people will still endure to the past music. And I think it's not just because we just want to be stuck in the past. I think a lot of people who enjoyed the music from the 90s appreciated that music was from a different place. Right. What we've recognized, what labels are doing now, is that they are just putting out stuff, getting quick money, and a lot of true music fans are not impressed by the similarity with the tracks, the fact that they moved to hip hop because it was cheaper to just get a beat, get somebody to just to lazy rap over a beat, no creativity, so so it's cheaper for the labels, and it's flooding the market. So that's why you see a lot of people saying, you know what, we want to go back to the old stuff, because it was stuff that we knew there was a lot more care and attention put into it. So my hope is that you guys, coming forward, that you don't emulate what's in the marketplace, because a lot of us aren't really into it, but you sort of say, remembering the roots and think, well, how can we not just play 90s style music, but just keep that sort of originality, that type of stuff that people really endured then, and know that and trust that there will be a market for it, proper love songs and proper songs that really have a story in it, that it's not over reliant on the production and the beats, but also the melody, the singing and the structure, and giving people the space to say, you know, this is what we're looking for. So that's my hope, that we should see that from the new stuff where you guys are going to come up.
Definitely.
You know, and people like yourself, man, that reach out to us, that want to interview us and keep all the music going with all the artists. Like I said, I've watched a lot of the performances from, you know, the Keith Sweats to the Teddies, the SCBV on your site and everything. So, you know, we appreciate it, man. Just keep the name moving. We're gonna bring the product. We got the product coming.
Yeah. As I said, this will be definitely, as I said, I need to scram around and find some of the newer performances, because what I don't want to do a disservice is, because, you know, the old tracks, like, you know, Deezer was performing on, if I start using that too much, it's quite easy to just start thinking, oh, he's still part of the group and that's the sound. So it's great if you guys have some of these, even your hits, if you had re-recorded them with Sean and Anthony performing them, it then gives it a sense of, okay, we're connecting the old with the new, and in a sense, it helps people to sort of connect. Because his vocals, I mean, as we proceeded to the club, I'm like, proceeded? Yeah. Who says that? Yeah. I'm listening to that, and that's, I mean, this came out in 91, 92, and I still remember him almost speaking as he's singing our lyrics, very distinct voice and vocal he has. So it's important that you guys are able to sort of re-record those tracks, if you got permission to. I don't know what the big stuff is. So at least then people can then connect that these are this is you guys. You know, everyone from Queen, everyone does it. They re-record. They can't rely on, say, Freddie Mercury's vocals. So when Adam Lambert does stuff for Queen, he re-records them so that we're getting his voice. We get used to his vocals on the classic tracks and stuff. So I would hope
one quick note too: when you go and search the performances, when you see the performance in Columbus, that's when it was after Diesel had passed, and we actually the show that you'll probably see is a tribute. Because you'll see that we have the Basic Black shirts on, the logos, but on the back, all of us had Diesel name on the back of our shirts.
Okay.
And you'll see that as well. So that performance, so when you see it, oh man, he's killing it, that show is dedicated to him. So we always keep, you know, keep him and keep that going on every show that we do. We don't want people to forget about that sound was, what it sounded like, but we have newer members, so the sound will change, because we're introducing the new members. So we're not trying to sound like Diesel or the old bass that we're moving on, but we will always have that music there, and we're always going to perform those great songs that people love.
Yeah, and as I said, giving it a new twist with the new vocals. Right. I mean, I definitely would like to hear Sean and Anthony sing those classics and stuff. Is Anthony allowed to sing the slow song, or is is that?
Oh, you got
it. I give it to him every time I sing it.
We got to come to London. See this? Once you put this out, you know, push for these promoters. Hey, when everything open up, hey, I can get in touch with Basic Black. You want them to come over? We ready.
We'll
come and do that. We got an hour and a half long show right now. You need us 2 hours? Give us a day. We got a 2 hour long show. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So we good with it.
Most definitely. I mean, you guys have definitely given us a great time. I'll look forward to getting the video of you guys doing your own version of Pass the Mic with some of your classic tracks, so that would really help sort of help with
just let us know when you were supposed to do that.
I would have because the thing is that I'm even wondering how you guys would do it. I would assume that if you had a track playing, and okay. you know you're just recording, you know right. you're singing one verse, and then you know you kind of split, because that's what the pass the mic was that they record a part and they'll cut it and then cut another part and they just sort of put the stuff together. But it does help to create sort of viral video. So, and as I said, if you're singing, you can try all three songs that you guys have, but it's just recording, just a verse and a hook, but it wouldn't have been with me. Was that Anthony?
we're gonna have it soon.
Okay.
So do you want us to record it and then send it to you?
Yeah, if you could, yeah. So then, yeah.
We got it. Okay, I thought maybe you wanted to do it live.
No, you know, that because it's quite hard, you know, because right now you've just got everyone in one shot. Right. So what you do want is like almost like, you know, record a bit, you know, singing a part, then, you know, you just editing and just putting the sort of videos together.
Okay.
And we're
going to
get that drop to you.
Okay.
We've got
there's our new R&B radio station that's hitting big in Europe. And so this is them playing some of the old stuff, but it also plays some of the new stuff. So having the drop really does help as they're playing the new jack stuff. So that's really getting your name back in Europe as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we could definitely send that drop to you as well too.
Yeah.
Definitely. Do you have the information about the drop? Like the session?
I do.
Okay, cool. So we'll get that out to you. Yeah.
So it's like each of your names, and we're from Blaze of Black, and then I think it's like they were Blaze of Black and stuff. Oh, so, ooh. But it's, as I said, it's really trying to really, you know, as I said, you guys, when we think of New Jack Swing, there's, you know, there's Guy, there's Today, and there's Blaze of Black. When you think of the groups, there are not many sort of core New Jack Swing groups. So so you still have that legacy there.
It's not many, and we still the underdogs for some reason. We had some strong songs, brother, and people know us. People know us, but we still getting more interviews, getting the name back out there, doing this and that. And when people say, oh man, y'all got a new project? Oh, y'all, yeah, we here. You know, it just, but we back out, man.
Definitely. But as I said, once I get that stuff out, then, you know, over the next couple of weeks, then I'll start pushing the stuff together and pushing out. When I did the stuff with Timmy, it's really got a lot of, because people didn't understand, you know, the first Guy album, who wrote what and all that. So,
so
a lot of his stuff that we're putting out, people are like, wow, we didn't realize this and we didn't know this. And, you know, he talked about how he and Gene split up and stuff. So people just thought he just left the group, not knowing that he was forced out. So
he came up with That's actually him saying like yep on the album. Wow. It wasn't Teddy.
You're kidding me.
Yeah, it's Timmy Gatton that came up with the yep.
Wow.
I'm gonna give you that. I've been there. I got stories, man. I can't give you everything. That's another interview. We'll get to the dirt.
Thanks for watching. Please remember to subscribe to the channel, but most importantly, to press the notification bell so that you can be notified when we do have a new interview. Loads to come, but thanks a lot for watching.